Toronto! I wonder if they can hear it on Long Island.
Great move. What a goal. Beauty. Austin Matthews.
Bless you, boys. What a game.
Welcome to episode 65 of the Maple Leaf Hot Stove Podcast. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Anthony Petrielli. There's been an unusual number of games since we last spoke. Four. The Maple Leafs have gone 3-1-0, arguably lost the one that was the most important in the standings, and the standings have felt a little bit more important recently. A lot of the talk on the Maple Leafs had them locked into that number three spot, and it's just about fiddling with the lines and finding combinations. But with Florida falling back to earth and Tampa coming up, we've had a little bit more significance in terms of playoff positioning. Anthony, what are your biggest takeaways from the games that have transpired since we last spoke?
The biggest thing is 100% the penalty kill. I mean, we can talk about so many other pieces, many of which it's hard to know how seriously you should take them, how far you want to deep dive on certain topics. How much can you really break down a defense that's generally been missing half of their unit? We can talk about the depth, you can go through certain things and pairings and this, that, whatever, but that's the reality. And at forward, you're looking at it and you're saying either their second or third best forwards missing. I'm not going to argue between him and Nylander as to who's second. We know who's first, whatever. One of their best players, one of the best players in the league. He's missed a month. And Cale Yarncroc is a top nine forward on this team and a solid one at that. He's a legit 15 to 20 goal man. And he gives them something defensively, especially as we've seen them kind of struggle to close games lately. Those are two players you would want. So again, how much am I really going to dig in on some of those topics? The power play, same thing to me. Although I think the power play is a bit of a failure on the coaching staff. We can get in on that in a little bit. But the penalty kill being good is a huge development for this team.
The interesting thing about that is, and the results are what they are, right? I think it's 17 straight kills. Their performance against Tampa Bay was particularly impressive. We know that that's a lethal power play, and it has been both recently and over the course of the entire season. But a lot of the players that you mentioned, the players that are absent, the Mitch Marner, the Cale Yarncroc, Joel Edmondson, when he gets back, like these are guys that you figure are going to be a big part of the penalty killing picture. And, you're not going to not reinsert them, especially Marner, who's just been kind of locked into that first unit for a number of years now. So that's where it's interesting to me, because I do think, they're legitimately playing better. I don't think the results are just some kind of goaltending heater or anything like that. Like the goaltending arguably hasn't been great, especially from Wall in the last couple of games. But it's how do you take the success that you're finding now and then apply it to what are fundamentally going to be different units come playoff time, presuming all these guys are healthy, because Marner's going to be back in, Edmondson's probably going to be back in, and Yarncroc, I guess you can make an argument either way if you feel more comfortable with another group of players. But again, when it comes to playoff time, things often come down to trust and history, and Yarncroc and Marner have a massive amount of trust with Keefe in any defensive situation, but particularly the penalty kill, and a decent amount of history of producing at a pretty high level on that special team. So that's the thing that's interesting, because we talked about at the trade deadline, they made all these moves with an eye to improving the penalty kill. And, we've seen good work from Dewar, so it makes sense. But the whole idea was, okay, now you've got those guys, you're going to have the unit you'll actually have, which is totally different than what you've had for most of the year. And that could elevate your potential as a team. And as a result of these injuries, they haven't really been able to do that.
Yeah. And I think to the trade deadline was not sexy. It wasn't, right? And so it was met with a ton of skepticism, which was fair. They didn't necessarily bring in anyone that I would consider a genuine needle mover. But the one thing we said after the trade deadline is if they fix their penalty kill, which I'm not ready to declare that it's fixed yet, to be clear, But if they fix their penalty kill, then that does move the needle. Like I at least had some time to sit there and say he's trying to address a genuine need, you know, and you can point to the power play also struggling, but to me the power play you're not bringing anybody in to fix the power play. Like, no one's coming in that's
No one's
suddenly going to
available
play.
that's an upgrade on those top four forwards or Riley.
Yeah, if you brought in Tyler Toffoli, it would have been nice to have the right-handed shot while Marner was, you know, not playing for the past month. I'm sure he would have helped them. But once Marner returns, which is supposed to be this weekend, so hopefully that happens, you know, he's not playing on the top power play unit on this team. You go down the line, right? It's not like guys like Adam Henrique or Vladimir Tarasenko. Like, Tarasenko wouldn't have a chance to play on the top power play unit of this team as a lefty. So the power play, that needs to come from within. And if it doesn't, again, you're kind of just at that point where how many times are you going to watch the power play fall off a cliff come playoff time? And at what point do you say something has to change here significantly? We'll get to that if and when it happens, but I don't think trying to address the power play would have made any sense at the deadline. The penalty kill did. And, you know, you mentioned Connor Dewar. He's a nice player. I think he's a good fit. His speed is obviously noticeable. He takes really good angles to pucks. He's good at coming out with pucks and getting clears. He applies pressure all the way up and down the ice. He kind of fits with the Leafs have generally their penalty kill has not been good this year, obviously. But the one thing they have been good at pretty much throughout the year is the neutral zone of the penalty kill. Like they're good once they can clear it. The problem is when teams set up, it's just been an absolute mess. It hasn't been that the neutral zone part's poor. Like that's been the only good part of their game consistently on the penalty kill. So he kind of fits that with his speed. And I just think on the penalty kill, I wrote it this week, but they've switched a little bit more to a traditional diamond where they're a lot more aggressive on the walls. They used to do this like T thing, I always called it, or it's like two defensemen down low, you know, one on either side of the post, we'll call it, and then two guys lined up in the middle of the ice. And I think that's really to shade against the bumper plays that teams like so much and to protect the middle of the ice and try to prevent cross ice passes from happening. But I think what a lot of teams do now, the Leafs included on the power play, is it's not a cross ice pass. It's the defenseman at the top just passing it to the half wall. And when you're in that T formation, you're just, you know, the Lightning did nothing on the power play against the Leafs in the last game they just played. But in the first two games, Kucherov was eating them alive and he was just taking passes on the half wall with tons of time and space. But the worst possible recipe for success is Kucherov with time and space and a man advantage. And so they have made some tweaks. It's been nice to see if their penalty kill can hold and Marner can come back and get the power play going. The Leafs are going to be a tough out. I think people are really down on them, but I don't think they should be.
Yeah, I mean, the penalty kill and the power play, the sort of special teams, has traditionally been a strength for the Leafs. Like, they've had one of the better power plays in the league for the last few years, and the penalty kill has normally been at least decent. And actually, you know, this season, especially in recent months, I think the Leafs led the NHL in 5-on-5 goals in both February and March. And we've talked a lot about how there's just more offensive depth on the team. It's not just the core four and then like veteran grinders that you're throwing at the wall. And so, as a result of that, like I think they are a more dangerous 5-on-5 offense than a lot of fans are accustomed to seeing, which means that if you can lock in the special teams, you can feel a little bit more comfortable that component of, especially in the playoffs when, you know, there's no possibility of overtime. When there's a lot of things, situations where the refs do swallow whistles, again, at times we know that kind of the total numbers show that the penalties don't fall off as much as people maybe say, but there are moments, and especially I think the stats will show that in game sixes and game sevens and whatnot, you'll see fewer calls. When your team is strong at 5-on-5 or stronger than it's been, that's really encouraging. And you know, there's various players who play into that. Again, it's, you know, it's the Bertuzzi's, it's some of the younger guys who've emerged. It's John Tavares, who's been really good at 5-on-5 in the last couple months. And we'll see if he ends up playing kind of that third line role at any point in the playoffs. If that's a lever that they pull, that's going to be really interesting. But I do like your observations about the penalty kill, because it seemed to me before that, yeah, what you were calling the sort of T resulted in so much sitting back. And often the very best players are the guys who are setting up, whether it's on the wall to distribute or kind of off the dots, and they to widen out and take a lot of these shots. And, you know, in the, I don't want to say the Leon Draisaitl era or whatever, but like the last couple of years, you do see like a lot more elite players have opened their minds, I think, to the idea that you can take shots from wider out and make those shots dangerous. So when you collapse more on the net and you kind of passively allow the defenseman and the two guys on the wall to bump that puck around, I think life is more dangerous for you than maybe it might have been 5 years, 10 years ago. And so the Leafs do deserve some credit for making a bit of an adjustment. What the ceiling on that adjustment is, I don't know. We've talked before that the reality is the Maple Leafs do not have a fantastic defense core. I don't think they have elite goaltending. You know, Samsonov has looked good in the last couple months, maybe even better than good. That might be an understatement, but when you don't have an elite goaltender and you don't have elite defensemen, it's not fair to expect you're going to have an elite penalty kill. But even an average penalty kill, a top five power play that doesn't fall off in the playoffs and scoring, again, that's an ask. You know, that's an ask that goes above what we've seen in the past. But like those ingredients, respect.
It's not an unreasonable ask to say their power play should be good in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's not unreasonable, but it's not what we've seen. But yeah, like a very strong power play, respectable penalty kill, and one of the best 5-on-5 offenses in the NHL. Yeah, I'm not writing them, you know, I'm not inscribing their names on the Stanley Cup by any means, but it is a more compelling package than some that they've brought into the playoffs in the last, you know, Matthews era.
Yeah, and I have found it interesting because I've read in certain places or I've had conversations with people where the general gist of it is basically, I think this is the worst Leaf team that they've had in the past like 3-4 years, but you know, playoffs is a crapshoot and maybe this is the year it all just clicks and it, you know, maybe it goes right. And I don't view them like that at all. If things go right this year in the playoffs, I mean, first and foremost, it's going to be because the top players finally get it done. Like that will always 100% be the main reason or not reason they pay a lot. They pay a few players a lot of dollars and they ask them to drive the bus, which is not unlike basically every other team in the league. Like Tampa pays a few guys a lot of dollars. Difference is those guys got it done. You know, you go through Colorado, Edmonton, you know, Vegas is a bit more of an interesting one, but even still, like their top end is pretty, you know, it's bumped up there, like Stone and Eichel and Pietrangelo, like those guys got it done. So, you know, it's not unlike anybody else. I think if the Leafs do beyond the top guy portion, what I'll look at is I think this is the deepest they've been at forward. Like I genuinely do think this is the deepest forward group they're taking to the playoffs. Except for maybe the year, and it just didn't play out this way because of injury, but the year that they got Nick Foligno, I know that one gets knocked a lot, and my stance on it was always if Foligno could play with Matthews and Marner, and then Zach Hyman bumped down to that third line with Mikheyev and Engvall, which was really good that year, like that would have been a really effective group, and then obviously Foligno basically could not walk. We saw that in the Amazon Prime series. John Tavares got knocked out like 2 minutes into the series, like, a lot of anything that could go wrong did go wrong. But basically beyond that forward group, like I think this is the deepest they've been. So that would be the second reason I would say that they would, if they do anything this year, that's going to be a big, big factor, right? Just having actual depth and you can even see it already the way that they move lines around. And I don't know if Keefe is going to continue that come playoffs, or I don't know if old habits will die hard. I don't have the answer to that. But I'm just saying he has legit options now where he can look around and say, I'm going to throw this guy out there. And, like, I'm going to put Pontus Holmberg up for a couple shifts with Matthews just to try to change things up. And it wouldn't be weird, as opposed to I often, last year when they lost to Florida, they had Alex Kerfoot up with Tavares and Nylander in that final game. And they did for most of that series. And the whole time I was like, that's a waste of time. There's no point for that. But now I often find that they can put together line combinations across the board where I'm like, maybe if it might not be the optimal way that I would do it, but I get it and I could see how it could work. I just often am like, I think that there's more to it. And then the third thing I'll say is the general, physicality of the team. I think in some ways it gets blown out of proportion. But I also think at the same time, they did get pushed around by Florida. Like that was a big thing in that series. And they've been pushed around in previous series and they've had little pushback for far too long. So I do think all of those pieces are important. So yeah, that's ultimately that's how I kind of view the team as we head to playoffs. So it's like, can they, keep this penalty kill going? Can Marner come back, get the power play rolling? Because there's a four line attack here and there's some jam on this team. And I see what the defense is. They'll have to largely win in spite of it and keep it simple. But there are ingredients here.
I think when people conceive of this forward core, the fact that there is not an ideal solution for the third line center undermines people's opinion of the entire group. And I get it. Like, that's an important position. But because you have, if David Kampf is doing what he's supposed to do, because you and Dewar, fits with him well, we can get to Reeves and what that could potentially look like. But because you have that, the fourth line that you actually end up feeling pretty good about, and you have the strong first two lines. The third line, there's a lot of different ways to iterate on it, and it is kind of a bit of a wild card no matter which way you slice it. But there's a lot of quality on the wings. And so the fact that there's one spot in the lineup that you can point to, that 3C spot, and you might not feel particularly confident about whether it's Max Domi or Pontus Holmberg or some kind of camp elevation concept. Whichever way you do that, there's going to be part of you that feels a little bit uneasy. But I often come back to the idea that sometimes Leafs fans, I think, but fans of any team, put the really good teams in the league on a pedestal. Like, if you're not following all the other kind of elite teams in the league, it's easy to say, oh my God, Colorado is just unbelievable. And then you don't necessarily drill down and be like, yeah, there's holes on that roster too. Or like, oh, this team is unstoppable because they rolled through town and they crushed the Leafs once. And you look in the standings, like the Rangers, look at, how many points the Rangers have accumulated. That's not a perfect team by any stretch of the imagination. And it's, yeah, I think we
What,
get a bit.
the Leafs beat them twice. The Rangers one win against the Leafs was Martin Jones in net, and four of those goals went like off bodies in the net. Cool.
Yeah, so I think it's very easy to be overconfident in what we think the results might be. It's like, oh, the Leafs are this, and those are elite teams, and therefore they're not in the same category and they don't stand a chance. And I know that the recent history, it increases people's confidence that the Leafs are doomed and they will be an underdog if they're placing Florida or Boston. This is all true, but at the same time, there's some legitimate reason for optimism here if everybody gets healthy and Marner looks good when he's back. And there's a lot of things, right? Like, Samsonov has to keep being the solid goaltender he's been over the last couple of months since he came back. But it is interesting, like you said, like the conversations you have with people, and I would echo that. Like, there is a lot of this team has been uninspiring all year. This team is kind of like previous teams, but worse. And my belief is that a lot of that has to do with how many injuries the Leafs had over the course of the season and the level of instability. Like, there's
They're second
missteps.
in men's game, man games lost this year, I think.
Yeah, that
Like,
sounds.
they're right up there.
Yeah. And so, like, you've had massive instability in the net. You've had, you know, Marner doesn't normally miss games. He's missed games. You know, Riley, I know their record without Riley is unbelievable. They're a juggernaut, but like he's missed games. And then you have to, you know, you miss practice time with your power play unit and you have to shuffle things up and that affects it. You know, Matthews has actually not missed time the way he has it at some points.
Yarncroc's going to miss close to half the season when this is all said and done.
Yeah. So the combination of that plus a lot of unproven players like, you know, your Bobby McMahons and your Pontus Holmbergs finding their footing. There's just a lot that has gone on this season that I think needs to be considered in terms of mitigating factors that have made this team in the standings less overwhelming than it's been at other times. And so I get where people have that idea that this is sort of like the Maple Leafs you've seen before, but worse. And I'm not sure that I would agree with that based on all the things that have happened, that the roadblocks that have been put in front of this team that by and large, big picture, they've been able to overcome, even if there have been some ugly individual moments and stretches, undoubtedly.
Yeah, I also think the league is better. Like, I think that there were a few, like going in, like Detroit's probably making the playoffs this year, like particularly in the Leafs division, right? But going into past years, game one, you already went, these are the top four teams. And I don't know which way they're all going to play out, but these are the top four teams. And that's still the case. But I do think that the floor below them has risen a little bit, which is not nothing, right? Any sort of gains around you is significant. And, you know, Boston's obviously still very good. Florida's still very good. Tampa, you know, which kind of balances Tampa maybe taking a step back, but clearly still very good. So yeah, you kind of go through all those things. It's like, have you seen Rocky IV?
I'm not a Rocky guy. I'm more of a Creed guy.
That's embarrassing. Late. I don't even know what the hell that means. I'm a Creed guy, but I'm not a Rocky guy.
What do you
guy.
Mean? Like,
are you crazy? Anyways, that's one of the dumbest things you've said on this podcast, but there's,
I mean, if that's the dumbest thing I've said, I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, that's fair. So there's a scene in Rocky IV where he fights Drago, but maybe you would know him from Creed.
Absorbed the pop culture. Like I can get the reference.
So he's in Russia and he clips him in the round and he goes back to the corner and his trainer saying, like, you see, like, he's not a machine, like, he's a man, like, you cut him, like, you hurt him. And I was like, I was kind of like laughing, thinking about that scene when the Leafs were up 5-1 on Florida, because like it almost seems like Florida did a real number on like the fans' mental, like, psyche about this team and like what the Panthers are. Like, the Panthers are a good team. Like, I'm not taking anything away from them. I know that they almost came back and tied the game. I saw what happened, but you know, I see some of the discussions like, oh, the Leafs will be lucky to win a game or two against the Panthers. Like, are we talking about the same team? Like, Florida's not untouchable. Like, you can't convince me that you feel great about Sergei Bobrovsky at any point. Come, like, he's turned into a pumpkin more times than you could count come playoffs. Like, there's holes on this team. Like, they're really good. And there's a number of really good teams. And I think you've kind of seen it. Paul Maurice was talking about it when he was in. I saw Sheldon Keefe talking about it yesterday after Tampa. It's like, who of those four teams do you want to play? Like, you think anyone wants to play Tampa? You think anyone wants to play the Leafs for that matter? Like, that's not, there's no easy outs between those four teams. Like, they all have holes and they all are really good teams. Like, you know, any other group, it's not like the Oilers are a perfect team. They just got waxed 5-0 by Dallas, right? Like, you kind of go through, it's like Colorado's still trying to figure out what second and third lines look like. You know, Dallas is somewhere like in between. They're probably the most complete team of the group, but they probably lack the firepower that all the other top teams do, right? Vegas is probably in a similar boat. And, you know, the Leafs are right there in that mix with all of these other teams. Like, one thing that I will consistently say from here till the rest of this season and playoffs is, as people are kind of jockeying about who would you rather the Leafs play, telling you right now, the Leafs' toughest opponent is themselves. It is 100% the Leafs' toughest opponent is the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, there's no team that they can't play with from an ability to, like, they're never, like, they lost to Tampa. They didn't get outclassed by Tampa. They doubled them up in shots on net through two periods. Joseph Woll let in the first goal The first shot on net for the third time in four games.
Tough go.
Like, but I don't think, you know, and the third period was bad. They were not good in the third period.
Yeah, and when you're chasing the game, you got to see a little bit more life than they showed, for sure. Yeah. Like, there's things to criticize in that game, for sure.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they were perfect, but I definitely wasn't watching the first two periods going, well, Tampa really came in and just handled their business against the Leafs. I was like, well, the Leafs probably should have more than a goal, and Tampa should probably have less than three. And it's just one of those nights where it didn't really play out, and whatever, that's fine. But the Leafs have all, like, there's more than enough there for them to go on a run. It's about these guys capitalizing on it. And I think what frustrates fans is at this point, Marner, Matthews, Nylander, the gang has given them more than enough evidence to say that we don't trust them to do it, which is fair. Like, they're going to have to change that narrative. And the only way to do that is to actually, like, push through and do the thing. But, like, from a talent perspective, from, you know, a general roster perspective, you're looking at them, like, look at the Leafs top two, three lines compared to the Boston Bruins with, like, Danton Heinen is playing with David Pastrnak and their center's Pavel Zacha. Like, that's not good. Like, go down the line, you'll see it. So I think a lot of people are really just close to this puzzle. They're upset because they've gotten their hopes up with this similar ish group. And it's been burned before, and they just have no faith in the guys. And I'm not going to sit here and try to explain to you or, like, try to convince you otherwise that you should have faith. I don't even necessarily fully have faith, but I am saying, like, if those guys bring it and the Leafs get the goaltending, I think that they can get, like, they're as big a problem as any other team in this league.
Well, we haven't, you know, in the history of this year of Maple Leafs hockey, I mean, maybe you could say the Tampa series last season, but I don't know if I'd even say that. Like, you haven't had, like, a 4 or 5 game stretch in the playoffs in a row where you get the world beater Austin Matthews and Marner firing on both ends and doing the, like, 25 minutes a night and dominating special teams. Like, the best version of this group has never shown up for, like, even most of a series in a row. So that's, you know, we know that's in the cards. Like, we know that Austin Matthews can dominate for 5 games in a row. Like, we know that. Like, we've seen it a million times. I can't promise you it's going to happen. I mean, the evidence thus far says it isn't going to happen. I do actually want to spend a little bit of time on Matthews today, because I don't think we do a lot of, I mean, actually, this has been a more optimistic podcast than most. This is the wrong time for me to tell people that we haven't been optimistic, but we don't do a lot of kind of appreciation. And I do.
We're realistic. It's not about optimism or pessimism. I just try to be honest about where I think things are. I think they're a good team. I think fans are, like, unnecessarily negative. I'd like to just see people get behind them and support them. And, like,
I mean,
I don't
if
get
things
it.
Go well, they will. I promise you that. Like, if the Leafs start going on a playoff run, people will get involved. But we had, you know, the Matthews going over 60, up to 63 now. There's going to be a lot of discussion about the 70. And we'll see how that story plays out. Maybe there'll be, like, a lot of firing on empty nets if you get late in the season and the points don't matter as much. We'll see how that goes. But at the end of the day, like, the Maple Leafs, any hockey team, is an entertainment product. And I know that we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the competitive side and how they're going to fare in the playoffs and how that's going to affect people's relationship with the team. But at the same time, I'm not sure we spend enough time zooming out and being like, if you are a fan of the Toronto Maple Leafs, you're watching this guy, you know, whatever, 82 times a year, however many misses from injury, because he normally misses a couple. And that's something other fan bases don't get to do. It's pretty remarkable. And I just thought maybe it'd be worth taking a moment to, first of all, talk about the accomplishment of the multiple 60 goal seasons, because I know that that has popped up on, like, a million stat cards about the number of guys who've done that, a very select group. But also just, you know, what has been like to watch Austin Matthews and what you appreciate most about that experience, because regardless of what happens with the Maple Leafs in the playoffs, part of what makes following this team over the course of a month and months and months enjoyable is what this guy does.
Yeah, I mean, he's amazing. It's honestly hard to constantly find ways to describe it. Like, you just try to sit and enjoy it. And, you know, it's always going to be tied to the playoff part, which, you know, we just talked about it, so it's fresh and that's the reality. So like, I don't begrudge anyone that's captivated in the 70 goal chase, and of which I'm sure the Leafs and some other players are too. Personally, I just don't care. Like, it has, like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't care if he wins Hart. I don't care if he gets 70. I only care personally what he does between the end of the season and the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, that's it. Like, that's all that matters to me personally. But at the same time, I can also sit here and recognize, like, this guy's on a historic pace. Like, we've never seen anything like this before in Toronto. At, you know, he will have to have the playoff legacy in order to be like the greatest Leaf of all time, but he's like one run away from it, like never being up for discussion ever again, because he's done everything else that you could possibly ask for. I mean, I sometimes kind of just you pinch yourself watching it almost, because and I'm not saying this to knock like a guy like Slavkovsky or a guy like Lafreniere, who, like, I think are both solid players, and I think Slavkovsky is going to be a better player than probably people are giving him credit for right now. But, like, those are, like, good players, and they went first overall. And then you watch Matthews, who's, like, a generational player. And it's just, like, this is just a different stratosphere. You know, it's, like, even when they had Phil Kessel, and there was, like, a three-year stretch there where he was, like, top three in points in the league. It was, like, Claude Giroux, Phil Kessel, someone else, probably Sid. And unless it was when Sid was hurt. But, you know, it was like when they had Phil, and Phil was awesome and I loved Phil, but you would watch him and go, like, this is a really good player at what he does, but, like, he's not, like, there's a step below. Like, he's a step below, like, the top guys in the group. And, like, I'm definitely not taking for granted that the Leafs just actually have, like, if you're naming the top three players in the league, like, he's one of them. And I don't, and it's not even up for debate. Like, I, you know, you could go through the list or whatever, all the haters, like, they're all going to sit there and go McDavid, MacKinnon, Matthews in no particular order. Just those are the three top guys. And he's one of them, and he's a Leaf, and it's cool. Like, he was drafted here. He's developed all the way through. Like, if he keeps it up, he's legitimately going to have a chance to push for the goal scoring title, like, all time, which is just absolutely bonkers. I mean, it's crazy. I don't know how else to describe it. Like, I do sit and appreciate it at times, because we've seen some stuff, you know. That's I was having a debate with friends about just them, and he's like, you're always just optimistic about what they could do in the playoffs and this, that, whatever, like, probably too much so. And, like, one of the things I constantly remind myself of is, like, it was like once in like 15 years they made the playoffs. Like, we were doing this site at, like, 2010, 2009. Like, we, you know, there was, like, an 8-year run of, like, shit. And the arguments were about, like, Jerry DiMigo in the lineup or, like, Carter Ashton. And, like, it was bad.
It was dark. It was a dark time.
And now it's, like, you know, what's the playoff lineup going to be like with the Leafs having, like, three elite players in their prime, another really good player that's just exiting his prime, and a collection of other really good contributors. Like at some point you have to enjoy it, because that was a miserable 15-year run. Like, it was the one time they made it. It was a shortened season. We all know how that ended. And by and large, otherwise, it was terrible. It was actively terrible through and through. Like, there's no other way to describe it. And I'm not saying it's perfect, and I'm not saying I'm just content with them making the playoffs and getting bounced in the first round or the second round. Obviously I'm not, but at some point you also have to recognize a little bit, like, where it came from. And, you know, Matthews to me is, how many arguments were there about signing, you know, Paul Stastny, and, like, should the Leafs have just, like, sold their soul for Brad Richards, and, like, how good is Tyler Bozak or Mikhail Grabowski? Like, there's no discussions anymore. It's just like, that's
I
the guy.
I spent so many arguments defending Tyler Bozak, like, in terms of minutes and hours of my life.
He had a great career. He had a great career.
He did have a good career.
Right. No. But, like, those were the discussions before. Now it's like, Tyler Bozak's like, is he a better fit beside Phil Kessel in the Leafs first line? It's like, okay. It's Austin Matthews now. Now we're just debating, oh, like, do you also play him with this other elite winger, Mitch Marner? Or do you, like, tell him to go play with, like, second and third tier guys like Domi and Bertuzzi and just carry the line anyways because he's so unbelievably good at hockey and capable of doing that? Like, that's where the discussion has changed now.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't want to zoom too far away from the competitive because I know that's what people are most invested in. Like, how far can the Leafs make in the playoffs? How successful will they be? But from a human perspective, like, our most valuable currency we have in our lives is time. And we are giving over hours and hours of our lives to watching the Maple Leafs. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, and like you and I are Anthony, and the quality of that time is enhanced to such a degree by the ability to watch this player who is doing historic things, who makes things happen on the ice that sometimes you didn't even really conceive of being a possibility. And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking of what I like watching the most of Matthews, and it's probably the way he steals the puck from guys. Like, it's not even the way he shoots. I mean, obviously he fires off some unbelievable shots, but the shots he takes are often things that are just like what other people would do, but better. And what I enjoy is the way that he can get into a board battle or in the neutral zone, throw his stick out there, and in half a second, just get possession of the puck in a way that other guys are kind of half-heartedly in that battle, and suddenly he just kind of flips it. And it is, like I said, it's worth appreciating. I think you did a good job of articulating where the Leafs have come from before the Auston Matthews era, but it's worth appreciating where they've gotten to. And yeah, and there are other players on this team who do amazing things, like William Nylander and Mitch Marner, and there's lots of guys who provide highlights. But at the center of all of this era, is Auston Matthews. And the greatest Leaf of all time thing, we don't need to legislate that just then because there's at least 4 more years going. I could envision it being a scenario, depending on how much success they have in the playoffs, where it's like the difference between greatest career and best player, right? Like, he's almost certainly the best hockey player who's ever played for the Leafs, regardless of how much success they have with him being their primary player. And so maybe there'll be someone else you can say this is the greatest Leaf as a result of, you know, whether you want to go deep in the past and get Stanley Cups, or you want to go kind of like longevity and some deep runs with Sundin or something like that. But, you know, and that's, you know, you could argue that's kind of like the Gretzky-Lemieux difference, right? Where like Gretzky is the greatest of all time. Maybe Lemieux is the best hockey player of all time. And I think that Matthews is already the best Leaf of all time. And now he's just building on that. And if he stays further than the 4 years that he's currently under contract for beyond this season, what he does in a Maple Leaf uniform is going to be historic. And whether he gets 70 goals or not, and like you said, that, you know, that's an arbitrary number, and I think we should all be pretty damn impressed if he ends up with 67 goals, even if that's a curse number for the Maple Leafs,
I hope
or
it's not
anything.
67. Like, I don't want to look at 67 beside his name.
Man, I saw on the broadcast people were making a big deal about how Ilya Samsonov was like 19-6-7, and it like came to, I'm like, people are so scarred by this number. Met for many people like us were not alive when this happened, and at the same time, even just seeing the numbers 19-67 is enough to set people off.
The only time I want to see 67 beside Matthew's name is because then it's said that he broke it since then. And he did it again for the club. Like, that's it. Like, I don't need to see it beside his name. But yeah, all that said, you know, I do think what's natural to in the arc of players, especially young players that come into the league and have some level of success and quite a bit of personal success, is eventually they do hit that stage where it's like it's really about winning. And I'm not saying it was like not about winning before. But, you know, it does hit a point for a lot of players where, you know, it's like the Nathan MacKinnon quote that everyone always throws out, where he's like, I'm 8 years into the league, I haven't won shit before they won the cup. Like, they eventually hit a point where it's like, this is the only thing that matters. And I think he's hitting it. Like, it would be fairly unprecedented for a player this good to like never go on a run. You know, like in the history of the league, players this good that are like this elite eventually go on at least one. At least one. Like Ovi was just one, but it was one. And
I'm really confident he will. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's with the Leafs. It
I don't know
could
if it's
be
this
when
year.
he's,
I don't know how.
it could be when he's like 32 at the Los Angeles Kings or something.
Don't
But
throw that
I'm
shit out there on this podcast. I don't need to hear that.
just saying it. There's no
Yeah.
guarantee it's with the Leafs, but I feel like it will happen at some point. Because as you said, like, guys this good, and again, it's not, you know, it's not Phil Kessel. It's not pure score. It's guys, he's down the middle. He's 1C. He's affecting the game in every conceivable way. You know, he's probably in the playoffs playing not too far from half the ice time. Like, if you're that good and you're on the ice in every situation for that much time, it does matter what's around you. But if you get enough bites at the apple, like, it simply will happen.
Yeah, and just transitioning a few other like notes and thoughts, just I thought like quick hitters to like worth discussing. I think Reeves has been really good for like a month now, but in particular this week, I thought he was excellent in two sort of, you know, circle the calendar type games against Florida and Tampa. Like, I thought he brought it for both of them. And I think that's important to note in particular because of all the slack that he semi-reasonably deserved in the beginning of the season. Like, he wasn't good. He was like,
he looked unplayable for the first few weeks.
You can say whatever you want, but if you're like minus 11 in 12 games, like, that's just that's not the NHL. Like, that cannot happen. And he knew it. And he had a really interesting quote about, you know, essentially taking that time that he was healthy scratched to treat it as like a mini training camp. I don't know if the unsaid part to that was like, maybe he wasn't in the best shape when he started the season, and that might have factored into the slow start. I don't know, but he definitely looks more energetic right now. He's definitely able to get in on the forecheck and be a factor. Like, this is the player the Leafs thought that they were signing, and I have no problem with it. I like what he brings when he's playing like this. That line has been simple but effective. Not saying they're going to score the lights out or do anything. I'm not even going to sit here and suggest that they have a big goal in them, because I don't really think that they do. But in terms of just wearing out defenders, being a presence out on the ice, giving the team a little bit more backbone, you know, there was an early scrum against the Panthers where he kind of, like, it didn't really get much play on the broadcast, but he kind of like put his hands up. I don't know why I'm like putting my hands up on the camera right now, so only Nick can see
just
it.
But for my benefit.
Yeah, it was kind of like a hands up in the scrum, like it, with like the tone of like, ooh, like, what are you going to do about it, to one of the Panthers, as he like laughed in his face. And I was like, man, like, this is what used to happen to the Leafs. Like, guys would laugh in their face and like ask what they're going to do about it, and the answer was nothing. And now the Leafs are kind of turning the tables a little bit. And obviously he has to be at the top, like the top of that pyramid of doing it, because of, you know, who he is and what his role is and what he brings and the physical side. But I think some level of recognition is warranted that. And same with David Kampf, who I think has done a much better job for the past couple months. And again, this is what they paid him for. Like, they paid him for the penalty kill to be excellent. Like, it's coming around in the last couple of weeks. That needs to continue. But if the penalty kill is excellent and the fourth line is this like energetic, like grinding shifts out kind of piece, then that's really good. He did get burned against Tampa. That obviously can't happen. And Keith called it out after the game. Like, you can't just leave Braden Point in front of the net by himself.
Yeah, that was a rough look.
That was a questionable decision, to say the least. But, you know, that little hiccup aside, he's generally been fairly solid here. And that like fourth line has been a bit of an anchor group. So I, you know, they have to figure out those middle two lines, and a big part of that will be getting Marner and Yarncroc back and the domino effect that has. But I think they have more than enough pieces. Like, a really, like we said it last week, like, a really good player is going to sit when the playoffs start. And last year they didn't even have 12 forwards they wanted to put on the ice.
Well, if you bring Marner and Yarncroc back, presumably everybody's healthy. You know, Nick Robertson is the guy that you feel pretty confident is going to get put on the bench, but then you got to take someone else. And I 100% agree with you. I think Reeves has done exactly what his role demands in the last couple of weeks. Now, there's always that debate of like, is that role something the team needs? But to his credit, he's applying real pressure in the offensive zone. He's hitting, like, it's not purely intangibles. Like, he's providing a real impact, particularly in the offensive zone.
The fourth line's legitimately better with him on it.
For sure. And it really has been the last couple weeks, couple months, however you want to dice that up. The issue is, if Robertson's the one guy to go, somebody else has to go too. And that's where you get into like, is that Reeves? Is that Pontus Holmberg? Because he's not going to be 3C necessarily, and you're going to move Domi back there. That's where things get tricky, because it, as much as I like what Reeves has brought in recent games and in recent weeks, it's difficult for me to make a strong argument for Reeves over one of these other guys. It's not that Reeves has been useless. It's that to keep Reeves in the lineup, you have to have somebody else leave who, again, is probably a pretty good player. And like, you know, even Nick Robertson in his own way is a pretty good player, but I get why we're going to put him aside for now, and this is maybe not his moment. But that's where things get tricky. So if you're keeping Reeves, who are you going to pull out of the lineup outside of Robertson?
Yeah, I think the other part to that too is, and I saw Keith comment on it this week as well, and it's something I've written about a number of times, especially when they were kind of going through ups and downs in that, you know, December, January stretch of play where people with a straight face thought they weren't going to make the playoffs altogether. They have a lot of young guys and a lot of inexperienced guys or guys that are like second year, you know, limited experience in the league. Like, you know, Pontus Holmberg played in the league last year, but this is definitely more of like a true, like full rookie season. Matthew Nyes got reps in the league last year, but this is really his first full season in the league. Bobby McMahon, same thing. Connor Dewar is very limited in experience in the league. And that's four forwards right there that are, you know, and then Nick Robertson too, if you want to add that in. So it's like, this is like a really fresh face group. And traditionally, that is not what wins in the playoffs. It's not like rookies come into the playoffs and light it up, or young kids come into, and like by young kids, I don't mean, you know, like elite talent, like young kids coming in. I mean, these are like second and third line type players. Like those guys do not generally come into the playoffs and light it up. Like they might have a moment or two, but they're not horses. Like you need your actual veterans to be horses. So the idea to me of sitting two of the young guys really does not impact me. If anything, I'd probably say like it'll keep them fresh and ready to go and chomping at the bit and having this like internal competition as you kind of go along. And I also don't think what you start the playoffs with is going to be what you end the playoffs with. I think it's going to be revolving in and out. Like to me, like Reeves is a game one starter because I think he's going to try to set a tone for the series. And I think he's going to put some bumps and bruises on guys that are hopefully going to wear them down over 2 weeks going every other night to a level that I don't think Pontus Holmberg, Nick Robertson, like go down the list, Connor Dewar, like they're not going to apply that level of physicality to a player that's really going to bother them one way or the other. Now, at the same time, like Robertson's a genuine scorer. Like that does make a case for him at some point. Like he gets the breakaway against Florida, and I'm like, I don't know
how
anyone else
felt. Finish. That was a really nice finish.
It was a great finish, and I don't know how you felt about it, but like the second he got the puck, I was like, goal.
And oh yeah, like he when on his when it comes to conversion of opportunities, he's fantastic. Like yeah. And I understand why he hasn't gotten more opportunities because it's difficult to play him on his off wing and, you know, the defensive issues, and he's just simply gets pushed around. Like there's a, again, I kind of get it, but in terms of when the guy has a puck in a position to score, yeah. Is he going to score? Like he's right there at the top of this lineup.
The goal against Buffalo is like same thing. I was like, oh, if Nyes makes this pass, like before it happened, I was like, if he makes this pass, like it's a goal. Like there's no question. It's like, but, and you look at other guys, it's like the Leafs have, you know, like Matthew's the best goal scorer in the world. Like generally speaking, he's another guy I look at. I'm like goal. But you go down the line. I'm not saying that Robertson's like a better scorer than these guys or anything. It's like Nylander's like 0 for 6 in the shootout this year. And he misses a ton of breakaways in general, even like within a game. Marner, I think this has actually been his best year in terms of breakaways. He has that like little high flip that he goes glove short side, which is effective. You know, I would definitely not trust Tyler Bertuzzi on a breakaway. Max Domi's actually pretty good at it, even though he missed his most recent one against Florida. But all that to say is Marner is one, or Robertson's one of the few guys where I look at when he's like alone with a goalie, or I'm like, ah, it's probably like it's a goal. So like that keeps you in the mix no matter what. I think as you kind of go through, like my interesting like offbeat like take for the coming game against the Habs on Saturday is I assume that Marner's back, and I would actually sit Matthew Nyes for that game instead of Nick Robertson. I know everyone, the assumption is Nick Robertson. I would sit Nyes, and the reason being is he had some really good moments against Florida. He didn't do anything against Tampa, and I think he's just been up and down a little bit too much for my liking, and probably realistically for the team's liking. And I think there's something to be said about, like, he probably needs like a little bit of rest and a reset coming from a college schedule, which is like weekends only and half the games that you play in the NHL. And also just to let him know too, like, you're not untouchable here. Like, there seems to be a real air of like, well, like, it's obviously guaranteed Robertson and like no one ever discusses Nyes, but like, he's not an untouchable player in this year's lineup. Like, I think he's like a borderline untouchable in terms of like trading him. And I think he has a great trajectory coming as like, he's going to be a really good player in this league for a really long time. Like, this is not a knock on any of those things, but like, what, like, sitting Robertson and then playing him is like, we've seen that show so many times. Like, at best, he's, you know, he's going to come back in, he's probably going to score, and like, that's his game. Like, he's a shooter, he scores. There's not much else there at the moment. Like, Nyes can like actually dominate games because he's physical. Like, the way he gets around the ice, the way he creates space, like, you have more to gain from Nyes getting rolling than almost any other guy outside the top guys. Like, he's a legitimate difference maker when he's on his game. So, you know, again, like, a combo of like a reset plus like a slight like kick in the butt, I think is good all around. Like, I just, I don't know. I see it out there. I just thought I'd put it out there. It feels like people are like, yeah, like, he's like this untouchable guy, like, guaranteed in the lineup. And I don't know why he is.
I mean, we discussed last week that balance of developing guys and getting them meaningful experience and what is the best thing to do to win this individual game. And I said then that I want Nyes in all the playoff games because I think he's a big part of the future. Also, in theory, his size is sort of conducive to the tight area game that you might end up playing against a team like Florida, a team like Boston. But I don't mind your idea of, like, during the regular season, give him a rest, yeah, let him know, because I agree with you. I don't think he's been very good over the last, call it, 3 weeks, something like that. Like, he... And, it sucks when you're playing with Matthews and Marner and getting like lots of opportunities and getting lots of ice time. And then
you're pacing for like 30 points.
Yeah. And then you come down to a third line, you're getting far less. And, you know, there was a weird mini amount of buzz about the quote unquote kid line. But I think, and everybody knew that that's just like
not a real line, not a thing.
It will not happen. It was just a construct of the moment. And it's fine. Like, it helped them score a couple goals and get through a couple games, but nobody in their right mind believed like, oh, this is a locked in third line that the Leafs are going to roll through the playoffs with. So yeah, I'm with you for the regular season. When it comes to the playoffs, I want to see Nyes in every game.
I want him in the playoffs every game, to be clear. So that's why I want to kind of send the message right now. That's like, I'll do it. If don't get it twisted. I'll do this and it'll be fine. Like, we'll be fine because our top guys carry the mail regardless. But, you know, like, it's, again, a combo of like reset, take a step back, watch it up top, but also slight kick in the butt. You could be doing more. You know it. We know it. Everyone sees it. Like, it's, you know, playoffs are around the corner. It's time to find another level here in your game. Like, it's time to get going here. So I think all of that would serve really well all around. I think there's a lot of potential wins in that scenario. So I say that now because, again, I don't want to be doing in the playoffs. I don't want to be sitting there game three or four being like, this guy needs like a reality check. Like, do it now while you're, you know, putting out third and fourth lines to defend a lead against the Panthers because you're experimenting. Like, this is the time to kind of course correct all those things and make sure you're rolling and ready to go for playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting in the remaining games to see how they cycle guys in and out, especially when it won't necessarily be as a result of just who's available. If guys are getting healthy and they have real options that they can choose from, that will, you know, to some extent, maybe tip Keith's hand in terms of what he wants to do in the playoffs, or potentially just give them a few more things to play with, a few ways to rest guys who could be tired, who, like Nyes, could use that reset. We are going to wrap it here for episode 65 of the Maple Leafs Hot Stove podcast. We appreciate you guys all listening in. As we say every episode, we appreciate ratings, reviews, word of mouth. If you leave a review that refers to Anthony by any other name, including especially Mike, there's a pretty good chance that I'll end up reading it on the podcast if that's something that you want. So feel free to keep that in mind, and we will be back with you again next week.
Stops me. Everyone is looking at me. Heart is pounding and we're down by three. Look inside yourself, I know what I see. Do you have the guts to do it for